Welcome to Smart Cherry's Thoughts. This is Sai from India.
Hi, Steven.
Hello.
Firstly, thank you very much for coming to my show.
It's my pleasure to be with you today, all the way from London.
So yeah, I've gone through your profile. I can see you own a company, a media company, and I can see you're doing a lot of work and you're providing a service. So I thought to tell about you and the work that you are doing and a little bit about your background story to my audience.
It's very kind of you, and it's nice for you to invite me, and it's always nice to share my journey and the good times, the bad times, and let people know that, what it's like for everyone who has to go through this journey.
So can you please introduce yourself to my audience?
Of course, I'm Stephen Gurewitz. I'm 45 years old, born in London. I have a company called 2002 Studios Media Limited, which is a media production and localization business. I have some other business interests as well, which we will both talk about. I'm originally a musician and a composer and a music producer, but I still do that for fun. But my journey has taken me in different directions, and yeah, that's who I am, and that's why we're chatting today.
So when you started this 2022 Studios Limited?
So you're breaking up a little bit. The question is, when did I start 2002 Studios Media?
Correct.
Okay, so let me tell you a little. Let me go back a little bit. Okay, so as I said, I'm originally actually a musician and a music producer and composer. And my first business was actually a business I started when I was at university, and I started it with a friend of mine. And it was a small studio making music, and we built it in his house. And I had that business until I left university, and then we decided to separate and go our separate ways. And so at that point, I then built my own first proper purpose-built studio, and we opened it in the year 2002. And that company is 2002 Studios, which is a separate company to 2002 Studios Media. And that is a what we call in the UK a sole trader company, and the studio is my studio. And I for years I did music and I did producing. I helped people who had songs to make the song sound interesting and bring them alive. I produced some of my own songs. I also did a lot of education. I did a lot of music education and workshops. I even worked with the prison service in the UK. I did all sorts of things. I wrote a book on music technology, which got published and translated into Spanish and was used for children in schools. And I wrote for magazines, and a lot of my interest was music and sound. And then one day, a guy randomly emailed me from a company I'd never heard of, saying, "We have to do lots and lots of voiceovers in different languages for Microsoft. Can you help us?" And we'd never done it. But I looked at it and I thought, we could do this. And it looks like there's a lot of work here. So I told him the truth, which is, we don't do this, but if you give us time to maybe 3 months, we can build up a list of actors and we can do this. And this is an important thing in business, my friend, is it's all down to people. It's all down to people and relationships. Unless you're very lucky and you get lots of money behind you, or you invent the next new thing and you're like Elon Musk. Well, I don't think it matters if he's nice to people or not, because he's so far ahead, he can be rude to people, right? And we see this quite often. But for everyone else, for the majority of people in business, relationships and people and investing in people and giving people space and time and recognizing they're human is important. And this guy emailed me back saying, yeah, I'll give you 3 months. He didn't have to. He could have just moved on to another partner. But he said, I'll give you 3 months. And this is how we got into doing voiceovers in lots of different languages. And at that point, we created a new business to protect it called 2002 Studios Media. So it was created in 2011. And it was created specifically to start doing larger ongoing work where there was more legal risk in case people didn't pay us or whatever, and we created a limited company, and it was specifically created to do voiceover. And then from there, we've gone from doing just voiceover, renting out my old studio, to now having other offices with multiple studios. We still rent out the old studio as well, and we do more than just voiceovers. We do video graphics, video design, motion graphics with text flying around, animation, actual filming, and we produce lots of media content, or we do lots and lots of what's called localization. So people come to us with their existing videos or e-learning courses or pictures or documents, and we help them go into lots and lots of different languages. But it's all been a journey, all because one guy, when I was honest with him and said, we don't do this, but I think we could, he was nice enough to give us time. And time is a form of kindness. And if you give someone time, it's a big gesture. But it just shows you how important relationships are. Incidentally, that guy, he now works for me. He now is my COO. So it just shows you things. I think you call it karma, but things go round in circles. So there you go. So we started 2002 Studios Media in 2011, but I started 2002 Studios, which is a separate business, in 2002.
So you produce and create content and work on projects which are related to entertainment and education.
Yes, so the kind of content we do is a lot of it's education, a lot of it's corporate, some of it's marketing. So when it comes to localization, the kind of clients we're dealing with are your big Amazons or Googles or pharmaceuticals or engineering companies, but there's all sorts. And they've all got content that either needs to go, it's either customer facing, so it's marketing, or it might be training material for their users, or it might be internal training material for their staff. They obviously, these companies are global and they have global staff, and they need to teach them their rules and procedures or on many different subjects, everything from sexual harassment to anti-bribery to how to use their internal systems. So we're doing lots of that kind of content. Excuse me. We're doing lots of that kind of content. But also, we do create the odd little animation and filming for clients, which is a bit more creative. And we're doing more and more marketing creative content as well. And we do dubbing. We do dubbing. So sometimes we're not doing huge Netflix things, but we work with what I call other streaming partners. I can't give their names away, but they have lots and lots of content, and more of them are needing to do it in lots of different languages. So we do dubbing as well of media and entertainment content.
So tell me about your team.
So obviously we have studios in London. So we have a team based in London off the top of my head, around 10 people. But we also have a team of video engineers from South America. We support one of our clients very closely on a large social media account who produce a lot of content all the time. And they needed us to have a team in to cover the LA time zone. So we have 4 or 5 people in South America. We also have a base in the Czech Republic, and we have roughly 25 to 30 people there who are all video engineers or audio engineers, and then we also have a team on secondment to us in India, and they do DTP, traditional DTP work, but they also are experts at e-learning. So we have a really good e-learning team. So we're a small company of 50 to 60 people, But we have a global footprint, which is important because many of our clients are global anyway. We have UK clients, but most of our clients are not UK clients. Most of our clients are around the world, and they themselves have teams all over the place. So yeah, so that's where we are. And for years and years, the company has been very what I call a flat management system. We've recently invested more in a senior leadership team, but even then, we essentially have a senior leadership team of around six people, and then we have engineers, and we have senior engineers. We don't have lots of generic project managers. Our clients do, we don't. We use some really good tech called Just Do, and it allows our clients to talk directly to our teams, and so we don't need to have extra people in the middle who are not experts in anything. It just adds more noise. So that's an idea of our team.
You started your career as a musician, having a lot of knowledge on sound system and sound engineering. Now you are doing media work. Also, you are helping different companies or clients in their social media management or digital content. So how is this? You started with a musician. Now you are owner of a company and being the leader.
Well, I've always had a business brain. I actually had my first business when I was at school. I was an owner of a Commodore Amiga, and I loved the Amiga computers, which was an education in themselves because they were proper multimedia machines before anyone had heard of them. So even when I was 12, 13, 14, I was already playing around with sound and graphics and animation. And I actually remember creating my first little magazine, which we then sold in the playgrounds, where we would review different software and hardware. And I even remember contacting companies to get free copies of software or hardware to review. So I was learning business skills all the time, even though I was an arty person. Okay. So I've always had that element. But also you learn where the business goes. The music industry during the early 2000s was really struggling. It's a good industry now, but in the early 2000s, piracy was really hurting it. And even now, you know, people don't realize the average salary for a musician in, or at least in the UK, obviously in different parts of the world, it sounds like a lot. But I think, I don't know the numbers off by heart, but the average salary in the UK is somewhere between 25 and 30,000. I think, I might be wrong, but I think. But for musicians, it's still around 11,000 to 12,000, okay, pounds. So it gives you an idea that the music industry, obviously, if you're at the very top, you do very well. But otherwise, it's quite difficult. So I've always had an interest, obviously, as you said, in sound and music. And I've always had an interest in journalism and business. And with my experience with Amiga, I have a good understanding of graphics and motion graphics and this kind of things, even though I'm not an expert in After Effects. But it came very clear that my clients, you know, we were doing voiceovers for videos. So they were using us for the voice part, but it seemed obvious to say, well, if you need this, why don't I offer you this as well? And then you just come to us and we do everything. So it organically happened that we started offering, we hired a video engineer, and then we could offer people, hey, we can start doing this side as well. And then it grows and grows. And it's like now we have projects that need both audio, voice, sound, and video. And we have other projects that are video only or audio only or e-learning. And e-learning can sometimes be everything. So we do, you know, we can now offer everything. But I've always had an interest in a digital media. I think that's the important thing. I hadn't, you know, I hated school. I'm not a big fan of school. Okay, school, I think, is a big, we call it a sausage factory. So I'm not a big fan of school. But whilst I was at school, I educated myself. Nowadays, children can do it on YouTube. We didn't have YouTube. We had magazines. But with my Amiga and many magazines, I taught myself about 3D graphics and 2D graphics and this, that and the other. And even though I wasn't an expert at all of it, I knew enough to understand the concepts and the basics. So it gives me enough data to be able to manage a team of experts. And I can talk to them and sound like I know what we're talking about.
So the skills that you improved and you have how today that are helping you to manage the company, also help doing projects for different industries.
Okay, so being able to multitask is key. Obviously, as I said, understanding digital media and digital technology is really key. Obviously, you get CEOs of companies who don't have any of the skills needed to run their own businesses. They're hired because they're good at managing people or managing finance, and that's really important. But sometimes you need to get your hands dirty. You need to be able to sit in a meeting and actually be able to support your staff. I often think my job is to protect my staff. It's not to, I mean, there's a famous video, you may have seen it. There's a famous video, it's quite a few years old now, on YouTube called The Expert. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a very funny video where there's a boss with a senior account guy, and in the room is the actual one guy who is the expert, and they're sitting across from the client, and the client is requesting really stupid, impossible things. And instead of the boss or the account manager protecting the expert and listening to the expert, and then saying to the client, we can't do that, what you're saying is wrong. Instead, the boss and the account manager just says to the expert, you're the expert, make it happen. And even though that may happen sometimes here, on the whole, it doesn't, because I know enough about what we're doing that I can get involved in the discussions and protect my staff. So I like to think because I can say, hold on a minute, the team are saying this, we need to listen to them. And then I know enough to be able to go back and push against the client and say, and often the clients, they don't know what they're asking for. So as long as you come back with reasonable answers, or in some cases, reasonable questions that make them suddenly think, oh, that's a good point, I didn't think about that. Then, you know, so my digital media skills and my technology skills clearly allow me to, A, talk on a level with my staff where I'm understanding them, and two, allows me to take what they're saying and protect them when clients are being totally unreasonable, which happens quite often when people are being unreasonable. And in terms of other skills I've learned from my father. He was quite senior in business and he's a very clever man, so I've tried to listen to him. He's always tried to teach me informally. I'd say most of my learning has been anywhere except at school. I was lucky enough to do a very good university course, which did teach me things, but it was very specific to commercial music. So, but everything else has been learned through trying, listening, reading, and trusting. Again, it goes back to people. None of my business wouldn't exist if I didn't have people who trusted in me and I trusted in them. And it's about relationships. As I said, I'll say it again, if you're Elon Musk and either someone gave you a ton of money at the beginning, so you got ahead of the crowd, or you came up with something amazing like PayPal or whatever and then earned a fortune, I guess you can afford to be abrupt and you can afford to be rude. But for most other people in business, investing in people, which doesn't always have to mean paying them a lot, even though paying is important, but it just means making people feel valued and listened and not just being dictatorial, saying, well, this is how it has to be. I often joke that I'm being told how to run my business by my team. They'll say, no, Stephen, we really need to do this way. And I'm like, okay, if you're the one implementing it, and as long as there's a good reason for it and we discuss it, I rarely say no. It's a case of, now I understand what you're trying to do and why. The why is really important. Often in meetings, people are shouting at each other about what or how, but they never take the time to go backwards and ask why. Whereas if you ask why in a meeting, instead of someone getting annoyed with someone asking why or going, you should know that, yeah, if you actually go back and discuss the why, often at that point you discover everyone in the room had a slightly different understanding of what the why was, which is why they were coming up with different hows. Whereas if you go back and discuss the why, then you can make sure everyone's on the same page, or maybe even change what the why is. And at that point, when you then discuss all the hows, you've got a context and it makes it a more valuable meeting. But all too often in business, people find it annoying or frustrating to have to discuss the why. But without a clarified, without a clear why, everything else, all the hows, might be missing the mark. And then you and me might be arguing about our different way of doing something until we realize that you're trying to solve that problem and I'm trying to solve that problem. But if we discuss the why, we would have realized our problems were not quite the same. So these skills I've learned over the years, and a lot of them are things you can't learn on a course or in a book, but you learn by listening. You learn by listening.
The common thing between you and Elon Musk is he's an engineer and a business owner. And that's the common thing. And also, I can see, with your words, I can understand this analysis that you're saying, the understanding that you have in making things happen came from you being an engineer and understanding the music and creative work in detail.
Well, I think I said that there's always been two parts of my way of thinking. One, I am creative and being in a band and all these things, it does result in you having to collaborate, because a lot of artistic work is collaboration. But I've always had a logical, technical way of thinking as well, and I like problem solving. So I guess the two things come together quite nicely. So I'm lucky to have that balance in a way that I think. I'm not 100% engineer and I'm not 100% arty, because I can bring those two worlds together.
But there is a people's person in you also, a person who understands technology.
Yeah, I don't expect, I'm not pretending I'm a coder or this, but I've got a good grounding in technology, so I understand that more than enough to be able to make decisions and execute. Essentially, my company, even though we're seen as a media company, we're very much tech connected to the IT sector, to the tech sector, because a lot of our clients are in the tech sector. So yes, we for anyone who works for my company has to have a good grounding in understanding of technology, and more or less everyone in my company does.
So when you started it in 2011, the digital media, the social media people, who the users, the computer users or the technology users are different. Now the number is different. So what is the difference that you observed, and how you are able to adopt and do projects that you got?
So let me just say, you're asking, obviously, let me start again. The kind of clients that exist now didn't exist in 2011. Are you asking how do we keep up with the new demands? Yeah. Okay. So obviously, well, some of the clients do still exist, like Microsoft. But there's always new tech companies coming up, and they all need similar things. They all need marketing. They all need tutorials. They all need to train their staff. These requirements don't change. What is changing, which is the same across all industry, is obviously machine learning and artificial intelligence. So even things like voiceovers, the majority of the work we do is still human voice, but more and more it's becoming what we call text to speech. I won't call it AI, because actually there's AI involved in generating the voice engine, but the voice engines are not particularly intelligent. You have to do quite a lot of work to what I call prep the script and direct the engine. But certainly synthetic voices are now becoming a larger part of what we do. We already use some artificial intelligence on platforms which allow us to, because often, let me explain, when we're doing video, and imagine there's words flying around the video, which you get a lot in marketing and corporate videos, okay? If clients give us what are called editable files, i.e. the files that we use to make them, we can edit it. But sometimes they don't. They literally just give us a final video, and then we have to use a mixture of creative and technical methods to cover the original text and do all sorts of things. Well, a lot of that's manual work, but there are now more and more AI tools we can use to simplify and speed up those processes. So we're building those into our workflow. So does this mean one day it will all be AI? Probably, but hopefully not before I retire. But certainly elements of our workflow can be sped up using different platforms, some of them paid for, some of them free, or us building our own scripts, which in some cases we're doing. And so yes, the demands from the clients really are not changing, but what is changing is the speed at which they want them, the cost of which they want them, because they're aware that we live in this world and they're asking, can't you do it this way? Can't you do it that way? And so being flexible and being willing to try new software, new technologies and new workflows is really important to be able to keep our clients.
So, what kind of requirements you get?
What kind of requirements? So, say we may have a video which is an advert, and they need us to do the voice on it, change all the text in the graphics, or it might be an e-learning course such as a Storyline course where there's lots of quizzes and slides and learning where we have to change all the text. And when we ch and changing the text sounds like you just copy and paste, but it's a bit more involved because if you think about it, if you go from English to German. If it's that long in English, it could be that long in German. So you sometimes have to rearrange everything because the text doesn't fit anymore. Or imagine you've got an animation. This is where what we do is a mixture of creative and technical. Let's imagine you have an animation of three words, one word, two word, three word, and the word in the middle bounces up and down or does something, okay? But if you translate that into another language, you may have four words or five words. So what do you do? Which one's going to bounce? So we have to do a number of things all the time, which is both creative and technical, where we're making it look smart. It should be similar to the original, yet it may have to be different. With the voiceovers, the length of the voiceover may change, and we have to change the length of the video. So it's a bit like doing a jigsaw puzzle. You have to, before you do anything, you have to take look at the project and analyze it and cut it up into lots and lots of different assets. And then you have to recreate those assets and then stick them together again, like paint by numbers. So yeah, so the requirements, there's a lot of repetition, but every project's a little bit different. Now, if we're creating something from scratch, which we haven't really talked about, there, it's what I call, there, it's an arty thing. People will create mood boards and they'll create sweeping statements saying, I don't know, I want a video which is fruity and youthful, but why? And I'll just use all these random words that mean nothing to anyone. And then we have to come up with a storyboard and what's called maybe a mood board with stock images to say, so you want something a bit like this? And I'll go, yeah. And then you'll create something, but then they'll go, oh, actually, we want it more like that. And it's like, essentially language. It's very hard to understand what someone's really thinking. So if you say to me, I want something that feels blue, that might mean something totally different to me than what you thought when you said it. So when we're creating stuff from scratch, there's a lot more back and forth trying to understand what does the client really want. And in some cases, the client doesn't know what they really want. And in some cases, they give you feedback because they feel they should, because you're asking them for it. But actually, if they if you said to them, just, are you happy with it? And you didn't invite feedback. Often, if they were trusting, they'd say, yeah, it works. But, it's like with voiceovers. Voiceovers are not complicated. But if you ask six people their opinion, they'll all tell you, oh, that could be said differently. That could be said differently. That could be said differently. Right? But when you're sitting at home watching TV, you just accept it. You don't sit there going, oh, that could have been done differently. Okay. So when you invite people for feedback, that feedback sometimes can be very distracting. But in our industry, both in localization and in creation, often you have lots of what I call hangers-on who all feel their voice must be heard. And it can delay or slow down the process, and you can lose clarity on a project because everyone, this person's saying, please turn left, and that person's saying, please turn right. And you can't do both at the same time. So, these are the kind of challenges we have. But that's probably the same in most businesses. But when you're doing stuff which is creative, everyone's got an opinion.
So, as a technology guy, I'm curious how is working with technology companies.
Has it work? What's it like working with other technology companies?
How is working with technology clients?
Well, most of our clients, as I say, are in engineering, technology, or pharma, which is kind of technology nowadays. They're fine. They're just very demanding. They want everything yesterday. Yeah, some of them are very sit back and trusting, but a lot of them want to are quite prescriptive. But you know, they're fine. They're fine. I mean, the important thing is they have the requirement and we have the services. So there's no issue working with that sector. As I said, it's fast moving. We do get strange things. We had. I should explain, as well as being the owner of 2002 Studios Media, I also have an interest in another company called Voxabot, which is a synthetic voice platform. And that platform can use you could plug any voice engine into it, but by default, it uses the three major engines, which is Microsoft Azure, Google's, and AWS. And we had, I won't tell you the names of the companies, so I have to be careful, but we had, this all shows you the crazy world we live in. One client we had was one of those three. And they wanted us to use the voices of one of the other ones because they needed different voices and they weren't happy with their own voices. And ironically, in the same week, that company contacted us and they wanted to use their voices. Because they weren't happy with the voices they had in certain languages. So we ended up becoming the middle guy selling the other people's voices to each other. It was all a bit crazy. So technology companies, they're not always coordinated and they're not always thinking logically. But that's also because normally they're huge companies and there's lots of different people doing their own thing with different missions. And, you know, there wasn't always clarity of thought. But I think that would happen in any large company. But the sector's good. We're seeing a lot of interest in Voxabot, which is exciting. With Voxabot, we're growing, we're adding new features all the time. As I speak to you now, we have a new web page that's going to go live with a new, with some new features in our editor. And also because we use it ourselves. And we are a production company. I think the development of Voxabot is actually quite user-centric because we're thinking about how it's going to be used as opposed to this is some cool tech, is we're using it for our own projects. And I think that's making a difference as to how we develop that that platform. And I think that's, we've had quite a lot of interest from tech companies who might want to plug into it or use it themselves. And I think they're seeing how user-centric it is. Rather than developer centric, if you know what I mean. Some products are designed with the mind of the developer and some products are designed with the mind of the user. And Voxabot is very much based upon the needs of the user.
How is working for different parts of the world? The clients who are from different countries.
It's fine. As I say, most of our clients are all over the place, so it makes no difference to us. And we're used, you know, I wake up in the morning answering messages from China and sorry, it said my connection was lost, so I just paused.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we are connected.
So we're used to dealing with different time zones because our clients, obviously, around the world, and we wake up in the day answering messages from China and Korea, and we end the day talking to people in Seattle. So managing our team is not difficult, but also we use this wonderful tool called Just Do, which I have an interest in. My story is we were looking, when the company were less people, when we were like six or seven people, we already realized you couldn't manage it through Google and email, and we were looking at different things like Asana, monday.com, and all these kind of things, and none of them were really gelling. And then a friend of mine introduced me to a guy who'd moved to London from Israel, and he showed me this platform called JustDo.com. And within 48 hours, we had adopted it. And I liked it so much, I said to them, look, I haven't got lots of money to throw at you, but I can help you with your tutorial videos and other stuff. And so they invited me to be part of the business. And we use this platform intensively in our company. We don't have any internal emails. And believe it or not, 80% of our client project managers, even though they all have their own tools and their own systems, essentially their tools and systems are really not fit for purpose. And they always revert back to email and then having a Google Sheet or an Excel on the side. So when we show them our Just Do, they want to come inside our bubble, which is very strange because normally you go inside the client's bubble. Okay, but they want to come inside our bubble because they see the functionality is way higher than their own. And so being able to manage people and tasks through Just Do means managing people anywhere in the world is really easy. It has real-time chat, has really good security controls. It's a really revolutionary product. Unfortunately, not more people haven't heard of it, but it's like a generation ahead of Slack and Microsoft projects and Monday. It's super fast in real time, and I said it works a treat. And the important thing is, because our clients are inside it, they're talking directly to our engineers, so we can see what's going on, we can audit what's going on, we can track what's going on, but I don't need to be the middleman. So my clients in China can be chatting to my engineers in Europe, and by the time I've woken up, they're really decided what needs to be done or whatever it may be. And so it creates a very fluid working system. I believe the system's going to be going open frame and then open source very soon. So it's definitely worth logging into justdo.com and checking it out, because it's an amazing, amazing system.
So working for these applications or the software, so and understanding the user experience and trying to give the user interface which connects with majority of the people, what kind of research or what kind of analysis or what kind of plan you will do?
I'll be honest, the best way is to build a prototype and then use it in anger. And a lot of companies, I don't think, ever use their own platforms in anger. I mean, even banking, I mean, the app that I use for my bank, my British bank, it's atrocious. I often think that no one has actually tried to do the thing you're asking your customers to do. So we Just Do. Obviously, we use Just Do, and I joined them because I use Just Do. But even then, we've tried to make use of all the features, even if we didn't need to, within our own environment, to push the system to the limit and work out what's broken, what's hard to use. With Voxerbot, as I said, is it ourselves? And that then drives feedback to the developers saying, we need to move that button, or why is it when you click there, that happens over here? It doesn't make any sense. It makes more sense to happen here. So you really need to use the thing that you're asking other people to use. And just having a separate QA team isn't the same. You actually need an active user base. So you either need to create a forum of like privileged users who are going to give you feedback, or you yourself, or you can do both, of course, or you yourself needs to be using the same thing in anger, as I call it, because then you quickly work out, well, that doesn't make sense. Why am I clicking here? Why am I doing three clicks when I could do one? Why is that over here when it should be over there? And all this kind of stuff. I believe in being very much hands-on with the technology, and I think it's the best way. But the other thing, if you are going to do design documents and all this kind of thing, the first thing you should write isn't what is the product. That's not the first thing you should write. The first thing you should always write, as I said to you earlier, is why. What are we trying to solve? And who are we trying to solve it for? So you define the kind of user. You know, are we doing this for NASA, or are we doing this for the general public, if you know what I mean? Because they'll have different requirements. So what is the problem we're trying to solve, and who are we trying to solve it for? That's the first thing that should be in your head and go in a document, because it means everyone else involved in the process after that, they should have access to that. So that way, when they're giving feedback or ideas or suggestions, they're doing it in context. So they don't create suggestions that are not applicable to that, to the problem you're trying to solve. As they always say, business is all about solving problems.
So what you're saying is, before going and solving the problem with the technology, you need to understand the mindset and the requirement of the person who wants something.
Yeah, you need to understand who they are, what's the problem that they have. And when I say who they are, you know, are they media people? Are they arty-farty? Are they other engineers? Are they technical people? Is it a big conglomerate, or are we dealing with lots of small teams of four or five people? It might be an age group thing, even though you shouldn't be talking about age groups in business. Bottom line is there may be certain sectors that just predominantly, like gaming, you know, of younger people or younger minded people. And they may have certain subcultures within them, and it's worth understanding those cultures. So when you design a feature, you immediately understand this is going to be really important for them. One thing they've never put in Just Do, which they really need to, and hopefully we might do that when it goes open source, is that is you can put image. I can't explain all the Just Do now on this call, but there's lots of different images. You can't do images in chat like you can in Skype or something. And when you're doing UI design or graphic design or something, you sometimes just want to be able to literally say, hey, Bob, what do you think of this? And literally just put a thumbnail in the chat. So it's about understanding for example, so if you're going to target the creative industries with Just Do, you need to have someone involved in development who is creative and understands the use case. If you only have someone who is binary and a bit like a computer, they'll never appreciate why that's important, and they probably won't prioritize development of that feature, for example. So having people in the team who are not just there for the sake of it, but have an instrumental ability to influence things, who understand the cultures of the industries and people you're trying to go after, I think is really, really, really important. You know, Tesla, we talk about Elon Musk. Tesla, one of their cars, they thought it would be cool to put a yoke, not a real steering wheel, but a yoke. And that might have got headlines and be cool from an engineer point of view, but they've had to backtrack, and you can now order the same car with a steering wheel, because actually drivers want wheels. Because they have to do this, and you can't do this if there's a yoke, because it's always like this. So if you actually want to drive your car like a real performance car, you need a steering wheel. And they either decided to ignore the culture, or they probably never stopped to ask anyone, because I reckon some cool engineers were doing some cool things and just thought this would be cool. And we're Tesla, so it doesn't matter. But they've now had to put steering wheels in. So we really, understanding who is it that's going to be using this, and understanding their needs and understanding their culture, I think is really important in the tech world. As I say, something not creative at all. I bank with TSB, a British bank, and their online banking and their mobile app is awful. And I mean, awful, awful, awful. It's not just old. It's awful. It's like how it ever ended up like this is mind baffling. And it's obvious it's been designed by people from the banking side as opposed to anyone who has to run a business. It's just not designed for the user at all. And this is the kind of stuff you need to try to avoid.
It is amazing that the open-mindedness that you have trying to understand new things very easily, seeing it from the engineer perspective. Maybe that is one of the main reasons why you're successful as a business leader.
Maybe. I don't know if I am successful. I'm still here. I'm still here. That's the important thing. I'll tell you if I'm successful in 15 years' time. But right now, you know, what is success? Success, I guess, is being able to stay in the game. Running a business is really, really difficult. The hardest thing is we've always found is cash flow. Making, you know, you could be working on a project for 4 months before you can send in a bill, and meanwhile you've got to pay all your bills monthly. So the biggest business challenge, and I think it's the challenge for most businesses, is cash flow. That's why they have the saying in America and the UK, which is cash flow is king. If you've got cash flow, you can run a business. If you haven't got cash flow, it's a lot harder. So that's the biggest challenge. The other challenge, obviously, is recruitment. But have I been successful? I guess I am successful. We're here. We're growing. We are growing. And more opportunities are coming to us all the time. But sometimes in business, you have to be prepared for not only steps forward, but steps backwards. Sometimes you have to go backwards a little bit. You have to make some cutbacks. You then have to regroup. You then have to try again. And then sometimes you'll think, oh, I should have done that 6 months earlier, whether it be an investment decision or a cutback decision or a change of direction. But you can't beat yourself up and say, I should have done that earlier. I should have done that earlier. You can learn from it, and you can say, you can ask yourself the question, what should I have known to have been able to do it earlier? Because if you can identify what you should have known, you can look out for it next time. So then you will do it earlier. But what you can't do is beat yourself up and say, I should have done it earlier. Because if you didn't know what to look for, then it's a stupid way of attacking yourself. So if you know, if there's data you think that's available to you, you could start to analyze it and say, okay, so next time I need to be collecting more of this data so I can see it early. So then if we need to make that change, I can act upon it. But if you didn't have the data or you didn't have the experience, then hindsight is pointless. It's only useful as a way of learning. You shouldn't be using it as a way of beating yourself up and saying, well, I got it wrong and that means I'm not good at this. No, you got it wrong. And now you got it wrong, you can take that learning and be better at doing whatever it is you're doing.
So working for a project which belongs to space technology and working for a project which belongs to some food industry or some other industry which are non-technical. So where this understanding for you came from, is that from your previous experiences or from your previous jobs that you did? Because it's not that easy, like you said, to adopt and to do anything that comes, like solve any problem that you get.
So, well, hopefully, well, let me understand the question a bit better. In terms of localization or media content, it doesn't matter what the industry is really. The challenge is the content, if you know what I mean. If it's for food industry or software, it makes no difference to us. It depends what they're asking us to do or what they're giving us to localize. But if you're asking me a wider question, which is, can people go from one industry to another industry? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, having doing diverse work, the diversity.
Well, I guess if you look at my CV, it's not that diverse because I've always been involved in music or technology or music technology or media technology. I've been a community manager and consultant for gaming accessory companies. I have been involved in the development of video games on the sound and audio side. So even though my CV is quite eclectic, actually there's clearly a theme running through it. But you ask a good question. I don't necessarily have the answer, but yes, if you think about it, you do see people jump from industries. The most, you know, one of the famous examples was the head of Pepsi ended up becoming the head of Apple, okay, until Steve Jobs came back, okay? So is that a good fit? Does that work? On the other hand, in some cases it can. So, for example, I think, though, that the guy who went to Sega of America, who made it really successful at the time of the Mega Drive, I don't think he was from the tech sector, but he understand people and he understand culture. So he was able to in effect, do a really good sales and marketing campaign because he understood who he was selling to. And more importantly, the people at Sega were listening to him, so it ended up affecting the development of the product. Okay, I guess it's having those combinations. Having someone who doesn't understand a sector and who isn't prepared to listen to the people who do, I think that's going to be problematic. Just coming in and only looking at numbers and metrics is problematic. In the world of private equity, not with all private equity firms, but with the really big ones, they often will purchase a company. And even though they'll make all the right statements about investment in people and understanding this and that, ultimately, they just look at numbers. They just look at numbers and then often not interested in the narrative behind the numbers. And that's why you often see when big private equity firms buy companies, a lot of the key people after a period of 1 or 2 years leave. Because they suddenly realize they're not being listened to. They're just being treated as numbers, because numbers are the only thing that have value within the company culture. So if numbers are the only thing that have value, you in effect become a number because your efforts are numbers. And anything that can't be manifested as a number has no value. And often culture and narrative and context, these have stories. And they're hard to explain in numbers. So when you see people who jump from one company to another, if they don't understand the business they're moving to and they're not prepared to understand and give time to those who do, and they're not willing to value the narrative and the touchy-feely stuff as well as much as the metrics, those relationships don't work so well.
So 2002 studio media company till now, from 2011 to till now. So what is the main reason for the productivity?
We work hard. I work hard. I lead from the front. I start early. I finish late. I work at least one day on the weekend often. I used to work some days a week. I don't anymore. I can still engineer. I can do subtitling. I can prepare things. I get my hands dirty. Okay. And I think this has created a knock-on culture that everyone in the company works really hard. In fact, we had a friend of mine during lockdown. He came and did some work for us from another company. And he was amazed with our productivity levels and with the effort the team puts in. He was blown away by it. And I think this is one of the things that makes the difference, is that everyone in the company works really hard. I mean, our clients work hard too, but everyone works really, really hard. And I think one of the reasons is that's the way I work. And some of the key people I hired in senior positions, I guess I hired them in my image because they work amazingly hard as well. Oh, yes. So our productivity is that everyone works really, really hard. And I think that's set by me and the senior leadership team. And I'm often very much in awe of the people who work for us. And then also we use Just Do, which is, like they say, a generation ahead of any other tool. People often like to talk about their favorite tools, but then you do what I call the emperor with no clothes on. You say, okay, you've got this tool, you love it so much, but you're still sending emails? They go, yes. You're still using Slack? They say, yes. You still got a Google Sheet on the side? They say, yes. I say, well, you're not really using your tool, because if you're using your tool, you shouldn't need all of these different things spreading data all over the place. So Just Do has made us very, very, very productive. I said, we have a high... we have a very good culture within the company, and we have good workflows. And we make jokes. Having a jokey culture, a cynical culture, is sometimes good as well. So I think this has made a big difference. And we also have a can-do attitude. I think that's important as well. Having an attitude that, yeah, we can do this. There's always a solution. I think this is a good attitude to have.
And one last question, the biggest compliment that you got for the service that you provided?
Biggest compliment? Oh, I don't know if we have any compliments. When we get paid, that's a nice compliment. I think that's the best compliment you can have, is when you get paid and then they give you another job afterwards. We have had nice compliments. I can't quote anyone because I can't think of any, but people have said how pleased they are with our team, how delighted they are with our team, or they've heard good things about on our team, and they've contacted us because they want to work with our team. So we do get lots of nice things. I don't think we've ever lost a client. I guess that's a good thing as well. So, but the best compliment is when someone pays and then they come back and give you another job, because it means they're happy. And that's the same with any business. You know, if you go to a restaurant, fast food place, doesn't matter what it is, you buy food. If you go back, you must have been happy. Otherwise, you wouldn't be going back. Mm-hmm. So return business is always the best compliment you can have, because it means people are happy with your service.
And do you have any desires do you want to do any projects that you didn't do till now?
Actually, I don't know if it will be in the next 5 years or the next 15 years, but ironically, at some point, I'd like to sell the company. And then I want to write. I love writing, not just music. I want to write. I want to write essays. I want to write a book. So I actually want to go back to more to my creative roots. In terms of business projects, I have some ideas for some video games I might want to build, but they're further down the line. But other than that, we're on an interesting trajectory. My core business is media. We're investing time in Voxabot, and there may be some work I do with Just Do later in the year when it's gone open source. So we'll wait and see what happens there.
So at last, do you want to say about the work that you are doing, the service that you are providing to my technology leaders, who are my followers, or who are my listeners, or experts from anywhere on this planet, engineers, technologists, non-technical people, like everybody who are connected with me, what you want to say, how you can be helpful for them?
Well, I'll say two things. Go check out voxabot.com, voxabot.com, and sign up today. But also, if any of your technology leaders and influencers have got content, marketing content, anything like that, and they want to make it in lots of different languages, contact me today. And also, if they just want a partner in making their content, and they want what I call factory rates, we're really good value. And I'll tell you one of the reasons why. You go to some digital agencies in London, America, Europe, I'm sure in India, everywhere, and they might do 12 big projects a year, so they charge a lot for them. But because we have a different mindset, and it's all about volume and turnaround, especially on the localization side, when we do what we call source creation, even though it does cost more because there is more creativity involved, we still have still have the localization mindset. So we still have the mindset about volume, speed, and efficiency. So we can be good value partners for any of your audience, your community, who have internal or external content that they want to spread to the world. So we look forward to hearing from you.
Definitely. Can you share your social presence or your web links to my audience, to listeners, my podcast listeners?
Yes, so they can go to 2002studiosmedia.com. That's 2002studiosmedia.com. That's our main website. And if you go there, you'll see links to social media and whatnot. You can look up Stephen Gurevitz, Gurevitz, on LinkedIn. There won't be too many people with that name. And you can always reach out to me. I'm always happy. I accept most connections, unless I think someone's just cold, just spamming me. I accept most connections, because you never know what's going to lead to what. So people can reach out to me via LinkedIn. And as I say, voxabot.com, voxabot, excuse me, voxabot.com. Go check that out. It's being updated even as we speak, and that's quite an exciting new service. I look forward to hearing from your community. It'd be a pleasure to get to know them all a lot better. Thank you for your time today.
I'll put your links on the screen as well. People who find our video on YouTube can see it, and also on my podcast, they can hear it. So at last, as a business owner, as a person who is an engineer, musician, started from somewhere, now leading a company and playing, I mean, giving service and giving employment to so many people. What is your observation about my work? Have you seen any videos of mine on YouTube?
When you reached out to me, I had a brief look at some of them. I think this kind of stuff's really exciting. I think it's really important. Remember I said earlier that I think school, I never liked school when I was at it. I still think school is a bit pointless. I'm not saying no one should go to school at all or not ever, but I think the school system, and I don't just mean the British one, I mean worldwide, it is a sausage factory. My daughter's now 17. She just finished what's called her GCSEs, which are like an important set of exams. She now is focusing on only three subjects, which is photography, film studies, and English literature. She can't even remember the maths that she was doing 6 months ago. You know, she literally learned it to pass the exam. And I'll be honest with you, so I'm not saying that people shouldn't go to school, but I do think, going back to my thing about why before you get to what, I think people have lost track of the purpose of education, and they've confused the school system with education, and they're not always the same. And I also think that's because worldwide all the countries are comparing themselves against league tables and metrics, and the only way of measuring them is by doing exams. And so the whole system is designed around measurement as opposed to learning. And so the work that you do and people like you is actually wonderful, because it's learning, it's sharing, it's listening, it's asking, it's probing, and then it's sharing it with the world. And whether it be me running a relatively small company or someone much more important running a huge company, we've all got stories to tell. And actually, someone who listens to 50 of your podcasts in a row probably learns more about business than if they do 2 years of business studies at a school, doing whatever it is they do and all the rest of it. So I think you've got to keep doing what you're doing, and you've got to keep spreading the word. And I think it's the most beneficial form of education people can access nowadays.
One last observation, which is very valuable for me, can be a feedback for me from you. I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. Right now I'm getting trained as AWS cloud DevOps engineer. And also apart from that is my full-time job. Apart from that, I'm talking with experts like you who are already in the industry, who solve different problems, who are involved in different projects, and who are solving problems for different industries and different, who are from different parts of the world. I did more than 550 interviews in last 2 years. Also, a lot of technology people from Microsoft, Amazon, Netflix, from everywhere in the world. More than 100 plus country people came to my show, and I had conversations like this. They can be a CTO, CEOs, or founders, or engineers, doctors, authors, all kinds of people from all over the world. So me talking with these kind of people and asking questions like this, getting answers, collecting information, how this is going to be helpful for me if I come and work in IT in coming days?
Are you asking me how is it going to be useful to you to do all these interviews if you're working in IT? Well, yeah. Just as it's useful for your audience. You're learning as much as anyone. You're listening, you're asking, you're thinking, and you're probably thinking, I could do that, or yeah, that's a good point. So what you're doing is an education for everyone else, but it's a great self-education as well. You're clearly a very bright individual with the masters and all these other things that you have. And in software engineering, you need those kind of qualifications to be able to be visible and to be seen. But the bottom line is probably you're learning so much like a sponge just by talking to all these people. And in some cases, you might be learning what I call real methodologies, or you might be learning things you should do, or you might be learning things you shouldn't do. In some cases, you may just be listening to them and thinking, I didn't like that person, I don't want to be like them. And in other cases, you may think, I like how that person presents themselves, I want to be like that. So I'm sure you're learning a whole bunch of things. And it just proves that by talking and listening and engaging It's a really good organic education, and I'm sure that it means that when you end up running a team or a company or in charge of a project, you'll be able to pull upon all these things and go, oh, hold on, I remember he said or she said, maybe I'll change my behavior, or maybe I'll approach this, or you'll go, Stephen always says we should work out what the why is. So let's spend 15 minutes discussing why before we get into everyone's solutions or whatever it may be. So I'm sure you're learning so much by being the person who does all of this. It's very exciting what you're doing.
Maybe this is kind of
It
education or this methodology of education that you like that I'm doing.
Exactly. Well, it's been great to talk to you, my friend. It's good for me as well. It lets me remind myself what it is I do. So it's better. Even I've learned something.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor for me to interview you and ask you some questions and how you make things possible and how you created company and started with nothing and now creating so much energy and solving problems of different country people and different industries.
Thank you. Thank you. So I wish you well, and I look forward to seeing more of your shows.
Sure, sir. Definitely. Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Of course, I look forward to it.
Also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Of course.
Thank you, sir. Keep going and keep inspiring like this.
I will do, and you keep going. Stay in touch. Speak to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Sure.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.